411. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Maya Silver and Mark Silver are the authors of My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks. As the husband and daughter of a breast cancer survivor, they share their experiences with readers. My Parent Has Cancer and It Really Sucks provides life advice from real-life teens. The book creates a community of support to give you strength as you cope with your parents' cancer. It's estimated that 2.85 million American children live with a parent who is a cancer survivor. Everyone deals with their parents' cancer differently. Personalities differ. Some people cope just fine. Others may have a very difficult time. Your reaction depends on you, and a lot depends on the diagnosis. How difficult is the cancer to treat, and the success rate of treatment? Authors Maya Silver and Mark Silver join 411 Teen, sharing their insights and their experiences of coping with a loved one who has cancer. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having us.
It's great to be talking with you.
Oh, I look forward to it. I want to first applaud you on your book. I found it to be very informative and helpful. I thought it was thoughtful, and it was just well done. I mean, it was easy to read, but it had some really invaluable information. So I just wanted to applaud you on a job well done.
Thank you.
Thanks. That means a lot.
Yeah. Let's talk about what was the impetus for you writing the book?
Well, a big part of it was that I had gone through this experience as a teen without any resources to turn to. There's stuff out there for younger children, and there's stuff out there for adults caregiving their ill older parents, but there really isn't anything for young adults, preteens, teenagers, adolescents. And so we wanted to create a resource for that demographic because dealing with the situation can be really challenging, and feeling like there's nowhere to turn is never a good thing. So that's sort of the idea behind it.
Okay. And how old were you when you became aware of your mother's illness?
I was 15 years old, and I have a younger sister who was 12 years old at the time when we found out.
Okay. Mark, comments?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we have a section in the back of the book for parents, too, because sometimes parents need a little help through all this, and I think that's how Marcia and I feel looking back, my wife Marcia and I, that we were just sort of overwhelmed by cancer and didn't really know how to explain it well to our kids. And we told them pretty quickly, which was a good thing to do. I mean, when you try to keep a secret in a family, it usually ends up backfiring. So we gave them a lot of information about Marcia's diagnosis. She had bilateral breast cancer, a tumor in each breast. She had to have surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. But we never asked our kids, how are you feeling? How are you doing? How are you coping with this? Do your friends understand what's going on? And I think that's one of the things that we learned in writing this book, that there's just a lot of stuff we never talked about and that I think a lot of families don't talk about when they go through this experience.
Maya, what was your reaction when you got this information?
Well, a big part of it was just shock at first, because you never think you're going to be the one whose parents get cancer, or you have to worry about, you know, your parent potentially dying. And so it's kind of like, oh, my God, is this really happening? This is happening to me. And I think a lot of teens go through that sort of initial reaction. And then it was just, you know, I had a lot of mixed feelings about it. I was scared, but I trusted that my mom's prognosis of having, you know, she had a pretty good chance of surviving. I trusted that that was true, and that really helped me get through it. But, I, you know, it was also kind of, you know, I felt angry, and why did this have to happen to me, and guilty for not being a better daughter during the whole process. So there was a lot of complicated emotions surrounding my reaction.
One thing we did for the book is we created an online survey at SurveyMonkey, and a lot of teens shared, you know, what emotions they felt, and a lot of them, you know, the things that Maya just said, lots of kids said they felt that way too. Some of them were angry, some of them were optimistic, some of them were depressed, some of them were in denial. And I think one of the things you want to do with a book is just tell all these teens that these are all normal emotions to have, that if you're mad at your mom or dad for having cancer, that's normal, that it's like teenagers, you know, they have their life and they have their world and they're trying to make their own identity, and all of a sudden when a parent gets cancer, it's sort of a big change, and it's normal to be resentful at times or sort of annoyed at mom or dad.
As a parent, how did you feel as the spouse? Mark, how did you feel in response to her diagnosis?
Totally clueless, Liz. I wrote a book called Breast Cancer Husband. That was my first book, because husbands are pretty clueless. And what we discovered is teenagers and husbands have a lot in common in these situations. It's like, because you don't know what to do. It's right. Like, you know, in most households, I'm sure this is the first time. Like Maya said, you always think cancer is going to happen to somebody else, and then suddenly it's happening to your family. And it's, cancer is a very scary word. I mean, we interviewed lots of teens for this book, and one teen girl said to me, I wish someone had told me at the beginning that not everybody dies from cancer. So teens have their own preconceptions, whether they pick them up from the media or from their family, and it's a tough place to be. So we tried to do a little explaining about what cancer is and then just talk about how you cope with it and what helps you get through an experience like this.
Well, what avenues did you all go through to get information about cancer? How'd you find out? What did you do?
In our own family?
Mm-hmm.
We were very lucky that we had some amazing doctors that really kind of explained things to us very well, because, boy, I didn't even know the difference between chemotherapy and radiation, truthfully, when my wife was diagnosed. And I think a lot of people, you sort of hear these terms out there, and you don't really know what to do. And we were very fortunate for the book. We talked to several oncologists who were just wonderful, and we ask teens what kind of preconceptions they have about cancer, and sometimes teens think cancer is hereditary, they think it's contagious, they think deodorant and antiperspirant might cause breast cancer, they think that lung cancer is always caused by smoking, so there are a lot of things out there that people think, and we try to kind of, you know, in the book, just explain, you know, what we do know about cancer, and one thing that we know is we don't always know why people get cancer, and that's, I found that kind of reassuring. I don't know how you feel, Maya, but it's sort of, it, that way you don't look back and say, oh, if only I hadn't done this or had done this, it wouldn't have happened. It's like you just have to say, you know what, it happened and it sucks and let's move forward.
Right, at that point there's no, you know, there's no reason to stew in regret or wondering what you could have done differently. It's there and you have to deal with it as best you can. And certainly for a teen, that kind of feeling like, oh, it's because my mom smoked, or it's because she didn't eat organic food, or it's her, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't help dealing with it. It just makes you focus on unproductive areas.
But how do you get beyond that? Because I think that's so very important. I think people can get stuck at that point of, you know, why, the whys, you know, did I cause it? What could, if a woulda, coulda, shoulda, that kind of thing.
Right. I mean, we try to sort of negate that kind of thinking at the beginning. In our, we have a chapter called Cancer 101 that sort of goes through some popular questions and myths and debunks those myths and just provides some very easily explained information for teens, because they don't need to know the whole story. They don't need to know all the science behind it, but just the basic answers to those questions. So we try to set that straight from the get-go. Like, there is no reason to spend time wondering if it's your fault or if it's because you're bad people or why. There's just no point.
And then Maya found something interesting. She talked to, we both talked to kids at this camp called Camp Kesem, which is a camp for kids whose parents have cancer. And Maya found that a lot of the parents would try to not joke about cancer, but they would come, when they told their kids the news, they would do something fun or enjoyable as a family at the same time to kind of say, you know what, we're going to get through this, and we can still, you know, still go out and have a good time sometimes, even during cancer treatment.
Well, I thought your chapter, Cancer 101, was excellent. It was really well done. I mean, I think you dealt with the basics, you know, just making a difference between diagnosis and prognosis. A lot of people don't know what these terms mean, and you bring up the point that, you know, there's no reason why people get cancer. We know cells are going crazy, but, you know, it's not because she didn't eat the right food or anything like that. I think that's important, though, because often folks get stuck, again, on that. What did I do? How could I change?
Yeah, or they go on the Internet and find some scary piece of information. And one doctor we quoted said she's very reluctant to tell people to go online and look things up, because whatever is happening with your mom or dad, it's not necessarily what you're going to find online. It might be something scary or something that's not really true, and a dangerous place to go, even though that's where a lot of us go for our information.
Maya, how did this condition impact just your daily life?
You know, for me, I really tried to distance myself from not necessarily my family, but from the experience of cancer overall. I didn't want to be around the house that often. I didn't want to talk to my friends about it. I just kind of wanted to be able to walk out the door and leave it for the day and go to school and stay busy. And, you know, I think to this day that's still how I cope with any, you know, difficult situation, is just kind of like staying busy, putting my head down, trying to forget about it. And I think that worked for me to a degree, but it was always like this uncomfortable elephant in the room, especially around friends or at school, because I didn't want to talk about it. And so, you know, we found that with a lot of teens where it's just, you don't want it to become part of your identity. You don't want kids to treat you differently. So for me, it was kind of a constant battle of trying to be there for my mom and for my family, but trying not to let cancer become my life.
Did it impact your relationship with your parents? What impact did it have?
I think in the long term, and my dad reminds me of this, that I think it brought us closer and made us value each other a lot more. So we are, you know, we're really careful to try to talk all the time and say I love you. And I live out in Colorado, so I try to make it home at least 2 to 3 times a year to see my family. And, you know, it's hard to say because I don't know how it would have been if she hadn't had cancer, but I think it definitely made us realize how fragile life is and how important it is to show each other that we care.
But it's funny, going through it, sometimes Marcia and I felt like the kids were acting like typical teenagers, and we were happy about that on the one hand, because it's like, well, you want your kids to be doing their teenage stuff. But then sometimes you would just think, like, man, don't they even notice that your mom is lying upstairs in bed feeling crappy, and poor dad is running around, you're trying to pick up all the household chores. And there was one day, I remember, when Marcia was in the middle of chemotherapy, where she was sleeping it off upstairs, and I was running around getting groceries and dragging bags in the house, and the kids were sitting there watching TV on the sofa, and I thought they would see me and instantly understand I needed them to help me bring in all these grocery bags.
But they
didn't. They didn't lift a finger, so I exploded at them, and Maya, who's really very calm, just turned to me and said, gee, Dad, you know, if you'd ask us, we'd be glad to help. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot that part where you say, hey, kids, could you give me a hand?
But we certainly didn't go above and beyond. I mean, we could have been better on our own, but...
How important, and you've alluded to this a lot, but how important is communication in coping with cancer in your family when a parent has cancer, Maya?
We've had a few interviews, and the last question is usually, what's the biggest piece of advice you can give to a teen? And it's always, for me, about communication. I think that really colors your experience, and it's communicating with your parents and family, it's communicating with your friends, and it's also communicating with school, which we think is pretty important and sort of a best practice based on the interviews that we conducted and the research we did. And so it's really important as a teen to remember that your family and your friends aren't going to read your mind. And so, you know, I had this experience as well where your friends haven't gone through an experience like this before. They don't know how to talk about cancer. They haven't dealt with something like this in their life before necessarily. They can't really understand what you're going through. And so they're almost guaranteed to say the wrong thing from time to time or not give you exactly what you need. And it doesn't mean that they're bad people or bad friends. It just means that they don't really know what to say. And so what we emphasize is, tell your friends how you want them to act around you. Like, do you want them to check in with you when you get to school every day, or just wait for you to bring it up, or just be there for you? Let them know. Same goes with your parents. Let them know how much you want to know, how much you want to stay in the loop, what you need from them. Ask questions when you need to, because otherwise, if you're not communicating, you get in kind of a silo, and you're just dealing with it all internally, which is somewhat what I did. And then, you know, your fears kind of get out of hand, and you don't have support around you to turn to, so it makes your life a lot easier. Even though teens don't necessarily want a communicator, it's not their strong suit. But yeah.
Well, I know one teen that had to cope with her mom having cancer said she didn't want to tell her friends, and I want you to come on this, only because she didn't want them to treat her differently. Did you experience that?
You know, I had pretty good friends. I think they kind of got the picture when they would bring it up, and I never wanted to talk about it. Like, okay, let's just not try to talk to Maya about it. And I did decide to tell my friends. I kind of wanted them to know what I was going through, just in the back of their heads. But you know, I really didn't like when people asked me how my mom was doing,
right,
or if I was okay, because it was like, I didn't want to be perceived as weak. I'm like, no, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And we came across this expression that a few teens use called pity eyes. It's like this look that your friends give you when mm-hmm. they find out, or when you're talking about your experience, where it's just like, oh, I feel so bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to be pitied like that for the most part. So,
and that's exactly what this young lady was saying that I'm referring to. She didn't uh-huh. want people to feel sorry for her. So she would rather they not know. Yet, she
right.
was going through some behavioral changes that her friends couldn't quite understand what was happening, yet she didn't want to tell them what was going on. So it was a catch-22.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that really puts you in a tough place. And
mm-hmm.
I know the same things happen with teachers, too. It's like if you don't tell your teachers anything, and then you're having trouble focusing in class, or your grades are dropping because you're just not as doing as much schoolwork because you have more chores at home, the teachers won't know what's going on. But sometimes if the teachers know, they might do things that get on your nerves. Like this one girl I interviewed said that her teacher knew that her mom had cancer, the girl's mom had cancer, and one day the teacher asked a question in class, and this girl named Caitlin, whose name is Caitlin, raised her hand to answer the question, and the teacher goes, oh, Caitlin, how's your mom doing? And Caitlin was furious because she didn't want to tell how her mom was doing at that point. She
mm-hmm.
wanted to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we talk about in the book is, well, how do you know? It's good if someone in the school knows. Parents might sit down with the teen and say, well, how do you want your teachers to treat you? And the teen might say, I don't want them to talk about it during class, but they can talk about it in private, or not at all, or whatever. But if you can create that kind of communication between home and school, then you'll avoid those situations where the kid ends up feeling really sort of out of sorts because the teacher said the wrong thing in the wrong time and really ticked them off. And then some schools are really great and supportive. Like some kids said their school gave them like a get-out-of-class pass. Like if they were just feeling really upset one day, you know, at one point in the day, they could just show this pass to the teacher and leave the class for 10 minutes and maybe go sit in the guidance counselor's office or just go to the bathroom and wash your face and feel a little bit better and come back. So there are ways that schools can really make life a little bit easier for you if they know. It's just a question of kind of managing the information.
Okay, hold your thoughts. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return. Maya Silver and Mark Silver join 411 Teen talking about coping when your parent has cancer. Again, I would like to welcome them to the program. And when we were talking about what do you tell the school, how much information do you feel comfortable giving the school, Maya or Mark, both of you? What should parents tell? How much should they tell?
Well, actually, in my case, we didn't end up telling the school.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't even think about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we do, you know, after interviewing a number of teens and social workers, therapists, things like that, we kind of came to the conclusion that it's really important for at least somebody to know at the school. Just
mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, if things get worse, it's not like all of a sudden they have to tell the school that their mom is dying or is dead or the kid needs to be pulled out of school for some time.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to have an advocate that kind of knows what's up with that family so that if the kid is going through a really hard time, there's someone there that can help them and potentially buy them, you know, somewhat of a free pass. Like my dad talked about being able to leave class if things are getting bad or get an extension on a homework assignment or a test. And so we recommend that either the teen or the parent contact someone at the school to let them know what's up, like a guidance counselor or a teacher that's really trusted or a coach. Just some, it doesn't have to be everybody, but just one person
mm-hmm.
at least that's an advocate for them there.
Well, there's some changes, emotional changes, that are normal, and I think you referred to some of those in the first section of the program. I mean, feeling depressed or feeling angry, being in denial. Would you share some of the changes that are normal and that teens should anticipate when they have to experience their parent going through treatment, diagnosis and treatment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you kind of just alluded to is a sort of resentment. And, mm-hmm. you know, as a teen, you're trying to forge your own way in the world and figure out who you are, be independent, you know, be out on your own. And then all of a sudden, your parent has cancer and you're kind of yanked back into the family. And that's definitely what my experience was. Like, I didn't really want to spend that much time at home at that point. I was trying to figure myself out. And then all of a sudden you feel like you're supposed to be at home all the time and supposed to spend more time with your family. And so when you take time for yourself and when you continue to be a teen, which is important, there's often a feeling of guilt because you're out having fun maybe or continuing your activities and staying busy with school, and you feel like you should be at home. And so that's definitely something I experienced a lot. This kind of, anytime you have a negative feeling about your parent who's sick, having cancer, like, why does this have to happen to me? Or you're angry or resentful. It turns into this kind of guilty feeling a lot of the time, like, mm-hmm. That you're not being the best daughter, but that you don't know how to reconcile that. So it's pretty complex.
Well, the teen years are filled with, you know, soul searching, trying to decide who you are and what you're about. How did it impact your identity?
You know, I think it probably reinforced how independent I wanted to be and how I never really like asking for help to this day. And so I think that kind of maybe paralleled my experience with my mom's cancer, or sort of developed out of that, where I just didn't want anyone to feel bad for me. And I don't want pity from people. I want to do things on my own and be independent. And so I think that kind of fostered that in me, because that's sort of how I decided I was going to cope with it. And so I think that probably lingered on in me to this day.
Mark, what changes did you experience in your life?
Well, I mean, it's just a period when you're sort of, with many cancer diagnoses and with Marcia's, it's like you have mm-hmm. no idea it's coming, and then it just kind of drops in like a ton of bricks, and all of a sudden, all the plans you had for the year ahead are up, you know, are thrown into disarray, and you don't know what's going to happen now and how we're going to get through all this. And one thing you do learn is that as a family, you can get through things that are really tough if you do lean on each other and help each other out and respect each other. And that's sort of a lot of kids that we interviewed, and I think in our case too, we just really understand now that's what families are there for, that when you have a difficult situation that you know, you all kind of rally together. And on the same time, as Maya was saying, it doesn't mean it's normal. Like, teenagers can still get mad at their parents. We talked to one psychologist who mm-hmm. said that she told me an anecdote where a teenager said to her mom, "Now you have cancer and I can't even get mad at you." And it's like, yeah, you can still get mad at your parents. We're strong. We can take it. We might not like it, mm-hmm. but that's part of the teen-parent relationship. So it's kind of, at the same time as you're having this unexpected year of cancer, you still have to try to keep things going and respect the fact that your kids are teens and that you're an adult, and there's going to be conflicts and disagreements inevitably as things move forward.
Maya, do you feel like you had to grow up too soon?
You know, we did run into that a lot. We mm-hmm. Kind of termed it parentification, when a teen sort of starts to take on parental roles, either by just taking on a larger responsibility in the household or acting as a parental figure towards younger siblings. I don't really think, I don't really feel like it made me mature prematurely, or I don't feel like I lost my childhood or my teen years because of this experience. But I definitely did become closer with my sister, and I think take on more of a supportive role with her. Like, if anything were ever to happen to my mom or in any time of trouble, I'm sort of like there for her and act like a parent. But that is pretty common.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Especially
in single parent families, if it's a teen who has a driver's license, the teen is suddenly the designated driver for picking up carpool. And this one girl said, you know, she'd get up in the morning, she'd make breakfast and pack lunches for her two younger brothers, she'd go to school, she'd call her mom at 3 to see who's picking the kids up from school. It's like she was, like, taking on all these tours, and she's kind of said, you know, my real age is 16, but my cancer age is 40. And everybody, this was at a camp, at Camp Kesem, which I had mentioned earlier, the camp for kids whose parents have cancer, and every teen that we interviewed sort of understood exactly what she was talking about, that, you know, yeah, you are a teenager, but suddenly you're thrown into a new role, and you're dealing with issues that your friends aren't dealing with, and they might be worrying about, oh, can I afford those new sneakers, or can I, you know, can I get a ticket to the hot new movie? And you might be worrying, like, gee, you know, dad had chemotherapy, how's he feeling? Or, you know, mom's recuperating from surgery, what's up? So it's a tough place. It's a really tough place for teens to be.
And I definitely have some of those feelings where you have friends complaining about things that seem just totally non-consequential, or, like, being sick and, you know, like having a cold or something. And it's like, are you serious? It's just, like, enraging almost. You're like, you don't even know what you could be going through. You're so lucky. I don't know.
Well, the treatment for cancer, depending on what kind, can be very difficult and taxing. Individuals may lose weight, they're sick, they lose their hair, and often the teen may be embarrassed or not want their friends to come over. Did you experience anything like that? And if so, how'd you handle it?
I mean, for me, it was, like, a very gut reaction when I saw my mom during chemo, especially in, like, the week after a treatment, around a treatment. Because you never want to see someone that you look up to and that's raised you looking just so sick and so weak. And so for me, it was really hard to see her like that and to process that. And, of course, you know, I didn't want – I think I probably had friends over a handful of times, but I would try to go elsewhere instead of having people over because – it's not so, I don't know, it wasn't so much embarrassing, it's just, like, really uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to see my mom this way, and I don't want anyone else to either. I just want her to get better, you know, and be back to being normal mom. But it is, go ahead, Dad.
I was going to say, we heard about some kids where they didn't want their parent with cancer to come to a school event. Like,
exactly.
Oh, I'm embarrassed by the way dad or mom looks now. I don't want them to come to my swim meet or my school play or whatever. And that's, it's so tough. It's tough for the kid to express that, and it's tough for a parent to hear, but you have to understand as a parent, I guess, you know, these are teenagers, and for them, peers are so important, and they're not saying it to be mean or because they don't like you. It's like they genuinely don't want to be sort of thought of as the kid whose mom or dad has cancer. And if the parent can really kind of, you know, just take a deep breath and say, okay, I understand, but make sure your friend videotapes the swim meet for me, or I want you to know that chemo's over in 2 more months, and then I'll be able to, you know, look more like myself and come back. But it's tough. It's really tough on both generations, for sure.
Well,
but again, in the book, we wanted to say, you know what, it's normal, too. It's not like you're a terrible teen for feeling that. That's a normal reaction.
Well, another thing that's normal is depression, because regardless of how positive the environment may be and how open the communication may be and how resourceful the area may be with options and helping you to deal with it, depression is going to occur. How did you, both of you, cope with this situation as far as depression is concerned?
I mean, for me, I just tried to find a lot of coping mechanisms that worked for me, so ways to relieve stress and to distract myself and stay busy. And so,
would you share some of those coping mechanisms?
Because
I think they might be, you know, helpful for teens who are in the same situation, similar situations.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have a chapter on different ways to cope, and there's sort of different categories that work for different kids, and for some it's a mix of those. But, you know, being active, getting outside, camping, running, being involved in team sports is a great stress reliever and a great way to stay healthy physically and mentally, and, you know, socialize with other teens that are active as well. Then there's sort of the arts, creative outlets, performing arts or drawing, you know, studio arts, dance. Really helps a lot of kids sort of get out their feelings and process them in a creative way.
Yeah. One girl told us she would just, like, go in the garage and put her music on real loud and just, like, dance for, like, an hour, and it would just make her feel so much better afterwards. And the thing about it, if you can find something like that that helps you cope, then you kind of know, oh, at the next, you know, if there are ever any other crises in the years ahead, dancing makes me feel better, or reading a book. Reading a book is also great because you can escape the world you're in and enter this other world of the book, and it's a great way to kind of give yourself a break from all this. And actually, one of the most interesting things, I interviewed a teenager, and my wife's a high school teacher, and one of her students had a mom who'd just gone through breast cancer treatment. So this girl's name was Luz, and I asked her, did you talk about it? Did you write about it? And she was like, no, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to write about it. But she loved playing violent video games, like really violent video games. Mm-hmm. And this girl was so quiet and soft-spoken, and it was such a strange thing to think about. But she said she would just like feeling in control, and she liked feeling the vibration of the control piece in her hand. And then I went and interviewed a public health researcher who's looked at how kids react when they play video games, and she found that for a lot of kids, I mean, if you play 24 hours a day, that's not good. But if you had a bad day and you play for an hour and it makes you feel better, that's great. That's what helps you cope, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, how did you cope, Mark?
How did I cope? I had a hard time. I did a lot of what Maya said. I love to run and bike and do things outdoors, and I somehow knew I just needed to do that. You need to get out of the house and run away for an hour, but then come back, and you just feel better afterwards, and that made a difference. And then laughing at stuff helped a lot. I would ask friends to send us, like, funny books or funny DVDs, because sometimes you just want to sit and be goofy and laugh and not have to worry about anything, and that was really great for all of us.
Yeah, I think, being able to have a sense of humor about your situation and understanding that you're still allowed to have fun is really important, just because your parents suffering from cancer, even if it's a dire prognosis and they might, only have a short amount of time to live, it's so important to spend quality time as a family and do things that are fun, and not just ruminate in grief and sorrow because, life goes on and, you've got to be able to deal with it some way, and laughing can definitely help.
Well, we always talk about positive thinking, and you talk about the downside of positive thinking, okay? And would you like to elaborate on that?
It was interesting. I interviewed a psychiatrist who runs a program for families in crisis, and she used the phrase, the tyranny of positive thinking. Mm-hmm. It was like, we were like, how can positive thinking have tyranny to it? But what it is that people have different emotions at different times. And like you said, it's normal to be depressed or sad or angry. And if you feel like you've got to be 100% optimistic all the time and you can't ever express any other feelings, those feelings are going to be bottled up inside you, and they can really make you just feel sick, physically sick. They can make your stomach hurt or your head hurt. And it's just so important to feel like, if you feel like cancer sucks, say it sucks. Don't say, oh, everything's going to be great. And it's okay to express those things, and it's a better way to deal with them than bottling up all those feelings inside.
So you're saying have a realistic approach.
Yeah, be realistic and let it all out. Don't feel like you don't be afraid to say what you're really thinking.
What about the role of faith or spirituality or one's religion? What role did that play for you?
Well, it just depends on the family and the person. I mean, for me, I went to a Jewish high school growing up, but I wasn't very, I don't know, I've never been like a really spiritual person, but we had prayer in the mornings, and I would always think of my mom when I was saying those prayers, and I know my sister did that pretty religiously, but just, prayed for her every morning in school. And even if you don't necessarily believe that's going to do anything or that it's going to change anything for your situation, it's just kind of comforting and feels good. So that can be powerful.
Yeah, I mean, we interviewed some chaplains for the book, and one of them said, don't be afraid to pray and don't be afraid to ask for help, but try to pray for what's realistic. Like you can, pray that your mom will get her hair back after chemo, pray that, you'll be able to go out with the family again and have a good time. So you kind of find things that you feel you can pray for. And faith is really important. A lot of kids talk to us about how their faith got them through, and that's really wonderful.
Okay. You're listening to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return in 60 seconds. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly conversation with teens and other interested folks looking at issues that impact their daily lives. This hour, I am talking with Maya and Mark Silver. We're talking about coping and dealing with a parent who has cancer. You've talked about, Maya and Mark, the benefit of friends and letting folks know that what is going on in your life. Where do you go from there? And when I say where do you go from there, can you advise friends of things they should or should not do? I know we touched a little bit on that, but I had a student ask, what should friends do or what should they not do? And would you elaborate on that some more?
One big thing we found in a lot of interviews is teens who had a friend try to empathize with them and, you know, verbalize that they know what they're going through when really the experience mm-hmm. that they had was not comparable. And so to give you some examples, like, oh, I know how you feel. My pet
right.
died, or my aunt's sick, or my grandma died. And, you know, definitely all those are tragic situations. But when you feel like, you know, when it's your parent, it just is totally different. And when they're dealing with something as serious as cancer, it's totally different. And so they don't want to be compared to your situation, even if the intent is just to say, like, hey, I know what you're going through.
One girl we interviewed, people did say, oh, I hate it when people say, I'm sorry. Why are you sorry? It's not your fault. But one girl said, I find it comforting when people say, I don't know what it's like, but I'm here for you. And I think that's very simple, and that's what you really want. You want to feel like your friends are there for you. I mean, the worst friendship story we heard, I think, was from a girl named Emily who had a best friend in middle school, and Emily's mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. So Emily told her friend, and the next day the friend handed a letter to Emily, and it said, like, Dear Emily, I can no longer be your friend because I can't handle your mom having breast cancer. So there's a lot of bad stuff that can happen with some friends. But then if you can find, like, one good friend, I mean, Emily was lucky because she had one friend who was just there for her and hung out with her and did whatever Emily needed to do, whether it was, you know, sitting around listening to music or go to the mall or go to a movie, and that's what that can really get you through. And you really learn it. As an adult, you learn this too. You learn who your friends are and who just can't be there for you. And it's a tough lesson, but you really can find people that are there for you. That's what gets you through.
And that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What about social network? How do you use social networking in this situation? Have you found
Very carefully.
Yeah, cautiously, for sure. I mean, I didn't really have to deal with that because when I was 15, maybe Facebook was, like, just on the brink of invention. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely common for all these teens to use it now. And so we just advise that, you know, it can be a good tool for you, but you have to be careful. And so if you're going to post a bunch of you know, sentiments and feelings on your wall that other people are going to be able to see, you have to remember that it's not just your friends. It can be other people that might tell other people, and you don't know who your parents want to know. Like, maybe they haven't told all their family friends, and then you post it on Facebook, and your friend sees and tells their parents, and then, you know, so you have to be really sensitive about it and remember that that really puts it in the public domain.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because the student I'm thinking about said she posted it, you know, saying that her mother had cancer, and family members, all the family didn't know. And then they found out through social network. It was maddening.
But then some kids told us it was very helpful, too. Like, they didn't have to, if something happened, they didn't have to tell everybody. They would just, you know, email
put
a friend or put it on their Facebook page, like, oh, you know, things aren't going well, or things are, you know, chemo's over now and I'm so happy. And they wouldn't have to tell all their friends all this stuff. You know how it goes in the social world. Everybody knows everything in 10 seconds or faster than they can tweet. And then there are interesting things that some kids put things on their Facebook page. Like, some kids know their parents are reading their Facebook page, and they put messages on their Facebook page that indicate that they're really having some troubles. Like, maybe they would put some things on there that they're experimenting with things that hurt themselves or whatever. And when kids put that out there, if they know their parents are reading it, it creates a kind of a dilemma for the parents. Like, you've got to say something to your kid about it. You can't pretend you didn't see it. So it's just it's a tricky medium for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mark, how did this impact your relationship with your daughters?
I think, like Maya said, I think it just made us all closer together as a family. Like, even now, we'd like to take vacations together, even though our kids are both in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
and we're not afraid to say I love you. And I think that's, you know, people kind of lead their lives and they're in such a hurry, and we always want to let each other know how we're feeling about stuff, and that's really important.
Did you find that it had a influence on just your functioning as far as your own job may be concerned? You know, we talk about the kids and if it impacted their grades and how they were doing in school. What about your productivity? Did it impact your performance, Mark?
Well, I can relate to kind of what Maya was saying, that I liked going to work and doing my job because I felt like I know what I'm doing here. And when I was at home with, you know, Marcia dealing with cancer, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what my role was supposed to be sometimes. And it was almost reassuring to go back to the office on Monday. And it was, there certainly were times when it was hard, and there were days when I couldn't go in because Marcia had doctor's appointments. And and I couldn't, I was very fortunate. I had a boss who was very understanding. I know some people don't always have that nice situation. But yeah, it does take a toll. And you have to accept you can't do all the things that you wanted to do. But there's something really nice. And I think for kids too, like some kids kind of saw their grades spiral down at school because they didn't care anymore. But some kids sort of want to overachieve, like they know their parents love getting, you know, good report cards. So if mom or dad has cancer, they want to just work really hard in school and get good grades because then everybody will feel good about it.
When would you advise families to seek therapy or to go to a professional?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the one thing, all the therapists we interviewed, first of all, they said, if your kid doesn't want to see a therapist, there's no way you can make them see a therapist. But as a parent, it's like, you know, someone said to me, you know, you're better at diagnosing your car when your car isn't, needs to be see the mechanic than you are about figuring out when your teenager needs to see or your kids need to see some professional for therapy. But if you see things that would have worried you anyway, if you see, you know, if your kid suddenly is not, you know, visiting with friends anymore, kind of locked up in their room, if grades are going down, you really have to step up as a parent and find out what's going on. And certainly you can broach the idea of a therapist. You might want to give the kid a feeling of control, like, gee, why don't we try two different people? If you like one of them, we can see that person. If you don't like either, that's okay. You could set it up in a limited basis, like let's make two or three visits and see if that's helpful. So there are ways to kind of broach it without saying, like, I'm taking you to a therapist because I'm worried. It's just like, you know, gee, I'm a little concerned because of, you know, this reason or that reason, and maybe it'd be good to talk to somebody else. And sometimes a therapist can be genuinely helpful. I mean, some kids we talk to who'd seen therapists found it very helpful. Some kids just didn't want to go, and they look back now and they say, gee, I wish I had seen somebody. It would have been good to have someone to talk to about all the emotions inside. But like I said, you can't, you know, you can't force it. Support groups are also great. We visited some, not every city has one, but we visited some support groups specifically for teens coping with a parent's cancer, and it was just like a wonderful experience for these kids to be with other teenagers who knew exactly what they were going to through, and they could share, you know, their own family situations and what their friends were saying and what was going on, and that was tremendous for those kids.
Oh, luckily,
a lot of kids, to add one more thing, a lot of kids do experiment with risky behavior, and that's something we wanted to write about in the book too. Like some kids think, you know, that doing something that's a little bit risky will make them feel better, and it could be, you know, drugs or drinking or other kinds of things, and that's tough. It's really, really tough.
That's the one place where we, you know, we emphasize how important it is for the parents to still be parents even though they're going through a lot, and, you know, be aware of what is going on in the teen's life or have a family friend or relative that's aware of that, because for the most part we say, you know, kind of cope your own way, do it your own way, communicate in the style that works for you as a teen. But with risky behavior, it's really hard as a teenager to say, to acknowledge that you're in trouble and pull yourself out of that. And so that's where they kind of need some supervision or potentially need to go to therapy at that point and make a change.
Maya, when you think about it, what was the most difficult aspect of coping with your mother's cancer?
I mean, I think it's kind of like I said before, I was trying, I really strongly believed that my mom was going to make it. And so that, I never really, the worst part for me wasn't like a fear that she wasn't going to, because I just believed that she would. And so had I not believed that, I think that definitely would have been the worst part, is this fear that she was going to die or when is she going to die, anything like that. So I was lucky not to have that kind of feeling in my life. And for me, I think the hardest part was just trying to be the daughter I wanted to be and be there for my family while trying to continue on my own life. And I just had a lot of guilt over those years and sort of just distress about I'm not being a good enough daughter, but I don't want to spend any more time at home. I want to be coping and, you know, like out with my friends. And so, you know, I definitely felt guilty about that after the experience too. Like I should have been there more for her. I should have been more involved, more supportive.
But how do you, and how do you move beyond that? I mean, because I think most everyone may feel that at some point, you know, feeling
right.
guilty. And it, as we've noted, it's normal. You expect folks to go through that. But how do you move beyond it? Do you have any insights that you would share with teens who may be feeling that way?
And right.
How did it go beyond that?
I think the most important thing is to remember that, you know, everything's not going to stop in its tracks when your parent gets cancer. Even if they do only have a number of years left, you can't stop your life and drop out of school and, you know, break off your friendships and just be constantly at home. It's not realistic. It's not good for you. It's not good for your family.
Mm-hmm.
So we do is acknowledge that it is important to stay on your own life path and continue to try to be yourself and, you know, stay involved and have friends, because those are all important ways to cope, and really try to strike a balance with your time at home. But once you kind of accept, and if I had had, I guess, more acceptance or resources to turn to when I was going through it, it sort of indicated, like, yes, it's okay to keep living your life. It's okay to have fun. You know, everything's not going to stop because your parent has cancer. I think I would have had a lot less of a guilty reaction. And so that's what we try to do in the book, is try to normalize that and say, you know, you are going to continue to go to school. You are going to find ways to cope. And a lot of those might be fun things that help you get through this time. And that's okay.
Mark, can you identify things that the parent may do to just help them move on and move beyond that feeling guilty and feeling responsible and feeling angry? You know, are there suggestions that you may make?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like figure out how to communicate with your kids. And some kids, mm-hmm. You can sit down and have, some families have family meetings anyway. So some families would have like a what's up with cancer meeting once a week and just talk about not only how things are going with treatment, but hey, how are you guys doing? How are you feeling? How are your friends treating you? Are you angry? Are you feeling guilty about anything? Just let it all out. Sometimes that doesn't really work because it might be too high drama, like, oh, my God, the family meeting. So a lot of families, it turns out, in the car, it's a great place to talk because you're just driving, you know, back from soccer practice or off to drop your kids off at a friend's house, and you know, check in with them and ask how they're doing. If you've given them information about something medically, ask them the next day, hey, what, that stuff I told you about chemotherapy, was that too much information, not enough information, helpful, not helpful? And if your kids aren't talking to you at all, which does happen, maybe a good way to communicate is by keeping a little notebook in the house, and your kids can write down questions that they might have, and you can write down answers, and then the kid can read it at their own, you know, at their own speed and when they're ready to read
mm-hmm.
it. So just figure out your communication style and don't drop the ball on it. Don't figure, well, everything seems okay, so I'm not going to ask. Because all the things Maya's talking about, Marcia and I had no idea she was feeling any of those things at the time. Because mm-hmm. as a parent, you're so overwhelmed by cancer and cancer treatment and keeping your job and doing all the things that, you know, the parent without cancer has to pick up a lot of things around the house. So just talk to each other and figure out, you know, the best way to do that. Even post-it notes on the mirror might help. Like, going to chemotherapy today, pick up a pizza for dinner, just to
mm-hmm.
kind of keep everybody in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
The bare minimum of communication.
Yeah.
Can you think of, and I can think of a number of them, positive outcomes that may have come from this very stressful, this demanding situation that you as a family had to endure?
Sorry.
I said, can you think of any positive outcomes that came from this very stressful situation that your family had to endure?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps you put things in perspective, just like we talked about before with friends making comments about they're upset about this or that, and it's
mm-hmm.
inconsequential seemingly compared to your situation. I mean, certainly today I think I'm able to take difficult experiences or anything I go through with a grain of salt, because I know, you know, that cancer exists and death exists, and I've been through that with my family, and so I think it's easier for me to cope with small problems and big problems that might not be of the magnitude of cancer.
Mark, any?
Yeah, and I think. Oh,
yeah. Go right ahead.
How strong you are. Yeah, you learn that you can deal with this stuff, and it's like it's hard. And here's all your friends and other people you know who aren't dealing with it, but somehow people find the inner strength to cope, and that's like a valuable thing to know. It's like, yeah, I can get through something really tough like this, and know what gets you through it, and know that you know the next time you'll, you know, if anything, God forbid, should happen, you'll be able to deal with it as well.
Mm-hmm. In this last minute, are there any insights or understandings that you feel like you gained that you really want to share in this last minute that I may not have covered or may not have addressed?
You know what? It's tough for teens. Having a parent with cancer is tougher for teens and little kids in a way because mm-hmm. of what Maya was saying. They're in that developmental stage when they're breaking away from the house
exactly.
and the family and creating your own identity. And it's tough for parents. It's tough for parents. If teens are listening, it's tough to raise teens, and it's really tough when you throw cancer in the mix. So it's difficult, and that's why we hope a book like this would just help people understand, you know, what's going to happen and how you'll be feeling and how to get through it all.
And that every teen is going to be different and cope differently with the situation. There's no cookie-cutter way to deal with it. There's no mm-hmm. hard and fast rules, like you have to see a therapist or you really have to tell your school. I mean, we suggest a lot of things in the book, but it's going to vary from situation to situation, and the teen has to do what's right for them. The parent has to help the teen do what's right for them, and it's important for them to do it their way and kind of maintain autonomy in the way they're going to deal with the situation.
Well, Maya and Mark, I just want to say thanks. I really appreciate it. It was real.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Take it easy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Team or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team Podcast, log in wfsu.org.